This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 14th of March, 2023. I couldn't have timed a couple of days away from the markets better, guys. I'll let you know next time I'm going on holiday. There's been a joke around here that every time I go on holiday, the markets go haywire. And that's, of course, what we have seen over the last couple of sessions since that failure of the SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, last week. Bit tough to see where to pick up the threads here because there's so many moving parts of what's going on. One of the parts is moving less than you would think, and I think it's in the title of the slide there on slide two is the equity market, where I say the equities are a bit frozen in their tracks as the market tries to unravel the knock-on effects. I think there's the one side of this, of course, is that yields are collapsing, and that's hooray, let's celebrate that in terms of the implications for valuations. But we all know and can see signs of stress in many corners of this market and elsewhere that suggest that that there's a very high level of concern here. And we'll go through that today. But Peter, there's really not much to talk about in terms of the equity market as a headline. And it's a bit more about the internals. You made an interesting comment about something like contrasting what's going on with an Apple stock versus the small caps, the Russell 2000. So what is your takeaway here on this? Wrap up the markets and the previous session before we go into the bigger picture here.
Yeah, so Apple is a little bit of a special case because they hold close to $200 billion in different bonds. And they actually had an unrealized loss of $13 billion in Q4 on this bond portfolio. But that obviously reversed, some of that reversed yesterday. So Apple is a little bit of an odd case here, but you saw it across the other mega caps that they were really bit. I think investors were looking, maybe safe haven is the wrong answer, but they're looking for liquidity, and liquidity and safe businesses are what you get in the mega caps. And so you had those performing very well, the S&P 500 almost unchanged yesterday in the cash index. And then you had the Russell 2000 down 1.5%. Also, when you look at the valuations, you have small caps trading at a premium. Definitely some internals there that are looking shaky, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the podcast. I've highlighted, and I think that adds to what you said, John, that things are a little bit odd, and I think it's because there's such a big shock in the system that you have flows moving in all sorts of directions. If you look at the Asian equity performance index, this session across the different sectors, not a big surprise. Financials are down. Some of the Japanese financial institutions were hit hard. But then you look at real estate, which was the apparent safe haven together with healthcare. Healthcare makes sense, but real estate, I mean, that doesn't make any sense, because if you have a blow and a shock in the system and funding costs are under stress, then real estate doesn't make any sense. So right now, I think we should be cautious about interpreting too much into all the moves in every direction. We need more trading days to really get a more clear idea of where things are headed.
Yeah, I think a key to you talk about real estate or whatever the move was there. The first move is always when the value at risk explodes, you unwind your active book. So sometimes the first move is simply an unwind of what people's risk book looks like. So a reversal of that risk book is the first move to just reduce exposure. And then you see the big people putting on the thinking caps and trying to look forward at what the implications of all this might be down the road. So just, we need to put one thing in perspective here, and that is a historic move at the front end of the U.S. yield curve. You have to, our slides are a bit chaotic today, so bear with us. But if you go forward to slide six, you can see the move from 5% to 4% took three trading sessions. And this was without a pandemic-style shock. This was without a nuclear war. This was simply on a bank in the U.S. going bust and the implications and scramble at the weekend to shore up the system. An incredible move. It took, if we look back to 2007, as we were brewing towards the global financial crisis, it took let's call it 6 weeks-ish for a similar move to unfold. In the middle there, you sort of saw the first inklings of the real, of the blowups in the financial sector, the Bear Stearns real estate funds that went bust. I think it was in mid-July of that year, and you can see that acceleration lower in late July in the two-year yield. So we have seen something tremendous unfold here. And what we're seeing, and the reason that equities, and we're going to take you through this, should perhaps respect the risks and the system. Let's go back up to slide 3, and we look at something you mentioned, Peter, and I put up a chart here, the forward rate agreement OIS spread. And just in basic terms, this is a spread, so the differential yield-wise, between what banks are paying for funding versus relative to the actual yield on government, shortest-term government paper. And that has accelerated suddenly to well over 50 basis points. And in perspective, you can see that's the worst since the these are weekly data points. So the worst weekly close was somewhat higher as the pandemic during the pandemic outbreak. And you see the massive stress, of course, back in 2008, just before the huge interventions and as the interventions were unfolding from the Fed and the government to get ahead of that galloping crisis in an incredibly levered investment bank system. So there is stress in the system. There's a scramble for funding. And I think that is the key. And that is the forward risk here as we look forward to what this will mean, what this will imply. If banks' funding costs suddenly are galloping higher, that means the credit function is going to be impaired. So when you cut off credit or you start to cinch off credit into the economy, that is going to mean a weaker economy going forward. And that should be our concern, not right now, but in the months ahead. And just other financial conditions, we can look at the high yield spread on that same slide there on slide 3. It's blown out towards around 500 basis points. It has been a little bit higher in this cycle, but that is a big move. The spread widening from around 400 basis points to almost 500 basis points now. I would expect the risk would be for that spread to continue to go a bit wider. And then you point out, Peter, on slide 4 there, where equities might ought to be trading given what we're seeing here in financial conditions and the sudden, of course, deterioration.
Yes. In terms of the academics of it, I like the Chicago Fed's national financial condition index more, because I think it's better constructed, but it's more slow moving. So when we have an acceleration of time and you have an event like this, it's better to move to a financial condition index that is updated intraday, but and at least on a daily basis. And the Bloomberg's U.S. financial condition index suit this exercise. And as you can see here, whenever this index goes down, financial conditions tighten, and we have hit financial conditions tightness on par with what we had in late September, early October. And if the market is efficiently pricing things, and then we can go back and look, it's only 6 months ago, so you wouldn't expect a big difference. And the S&P 500 was trading just around the 3,600, a little bit above. So in any case, if we hit the same tightness in financial conditions, then equity should be down 5 or 6%, all else being equal. And of course, maybe we can argue that some things has changed, so maybe it shouldn't be as dramatic. But in any case, equity shouldn't be trading up here, given the blows to the system. The only way you can interpret it is that the equity market is it at this point it's quite calm. That this spike in tightness in financial condition will be extremely short term and will revert back very quickly. That seems to be the bet in the equity market right now.
And I think it's linked to your space, Ola, and what you're showing there on slide 8. I mean, part of the reason the equity market isn't lower, it's there is some corner of the equity market or equity traders thinking that it has to be, wow, we've gone from pricing Fed to maybe doing 3 more rate hikes, 4 more rate hikes, to now maybe not doing any more and an aggressive easing already in place. Let's call it Q3, but certainly by Q4. And you've got some thoughts or some of that mapped out on slide 8 there. And that hits, of course, or supports gold quite heavily.
Yeah, the investment metals, gold, silver, and platinum, they've been doing really well since Thursday night when this news started to break. Gold up 4%, silver up 8%, platinum somewhere in between. And it is the yield-driven spike that we're seeing, and some safe haven as well. So as the short-end bond yields has collapsed, the bids have started to come back into gold. Also, we have to remember we're coming out of a correction period in February where a lot of speculative longs had been cut. 52% in gold. 2 weeks ago, we're still dealing with delayed data from the US CFTC, and the silver lend has been cut by more than 80%. So basically, investors are not were not prepared for this this bounce, and that also drives some of the additional buying we're seeing. But I put in these charts, which I also post on Twitter regularly, and it's just a phenomenal change that we're seeing from a peak rate less than a week ago, indicating almost 4 rate cuts, rate hikes, to now nothing, and then expectation for more than 100 basis point cut over the next 12 months. So this is providing the tailwind, but also we have to consider whether we in the short term will run into some consolidation. Also the fact we got CPI coming out today that has been completely left by the wayside, but that number is going to be still going to be quite important. And then whether we see a reversal of some of these extreme gains that we've seen in the short end. But I think the overall takeaway for precious metals, if we have hit a peak in US Fed funds, then historically the last 3 times we saw a peak, with the subsequent months and quarters we saw very strong gains in precious metals. So I think it's not a time to take profit. It's probably more time to wait to potentially for some consolidation and the lower levels to get in.
Yeah, and if we look over in the FX market, not a huge surprise with such a shift in yields that we see those lower yielders that were weak and under pressure because of the anticipation that as we continue to tighten elsewhere, that yield spread widens against their favor. The Bank of Japan, a real non-event last week, and ironically that this Silicon Valley Bank catastrophe unfolds when the Bank of Japan sees a very quiet farewell meeting from Kuroda. Because with a collapse in yields, that supports the yen simply from a yield perspective. But as well, if you look at the chart there, you can see the strength is really especially notable in Swiss franc, always a defender of value, and then on gold. So obviously the Swiss National Bank also holds considerable gold reserves there. But those are quite hefty readings. Anything over 5 is already extremely notable strength broadly against the G10 currencies. And then no big surprise, the smaller currencies, or the G10 smalls, if you will, from Aussie over to Noki there, all in the red here.
Just looking a little bit back, John, because we just talked about that correction we had in gold during the early parts of February. That was obviously tied in with a correction in the dollar, where we saw the dollar strengthen throughout the first 2 to 3 weeks of last month. And again, just looking at the cut data, what we're actually finding so far in the data leading up to the 21st of February is that the speculators were actually selling gold into that gold rally, or selling dollars into that dollar rally, indicating that the appetite for dollar accumulation still remains very weak, and that's potentially just adding some additional flavor to this.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I know it is the Fed that we're seeing the most easing in terms of the forward curve here, in a relative sense. But if financial conditions are very dodgy and we're risking further deleveraging globally, I'm reluctant to believe that I understand what's why the dollar should be notably weaker across the board. But we'll have to, of course, follow this day by day. And just noting as well on that Aussie yen chart, getting into some interesting levels there, slide 5, the 87.50 area has been a level that has gathered up Aussie yen since all the way back into the first part of 2022. All right, I guess we need to get down to some everyday business to some degree. I think that's going to be very difficult, actually, for some weeks to come. I'm reluctant to do any takeaway from today's CPI, just as an example. But we do have the crude oil market also reacting. I suppose this is to a degree on anticipation that this could lead into a weakening economic outlook, Ola, this move lower in crude.
Yes, absolutely. We have seen growth-dependent commodities suffer a setback, not surprisingly, this past few days. If you look at crude oil here on slide 7, we can see we dropped below $80 in Brent. But at the same time, the market is still range-bound, and that's I think that's quite interesting. At the same time, we see copper dropping below $4, only to revert back above. So there's still some bits in the market. I think what's specifically interesting in Brent is the fact that we actually have a very elevated long position in the market. It's been building while this market's been range bound. So the market still have a firm belief that higher prices will come. Also, what's supporting that is the fact that the market is still in backwardation when we look at Brent. That's on the right-hand side, the prompt spread. So the spread between the first and the second month is still a 56 cent favor in favor of the front month. And that basically gives you a positive roll yield on a long position. And you would imagine that if the market is starting to price in a recession and lower demand, then these prices will come down. So far, they haven't. And that basically means that we're currently having a battle right now with between fundamentals, which inside the oil market still looks supportive, and the overall stress that's popping up everywhere else. So it's a battle that that will continue. But for now, Brent is most certainly holding on to its long-hand held range here.
All right. And then as we roll forward to stocks to watch, Peter, I think you've done a great job of saying, look, we don't know what happens next, but we know what maybe some areas we need to focus on. And so what is your focus equity market wise into the coming days here?
Yeah, as you said, John, I mean, what is the focus when you have all these things going on? It's difficult to really pinpoint three things in equity markets, and they can quickly be overshadowed of other events. But of course, the banks still very key to watch. I think the European banks and the outperformance the European banks have had over the past 6 months versus U.S. banks is still considerable. There is no reason to believe why the European banks shouldn't feel a little bit more stress and issues as well. Just as we've seen in the U.S., I think I very much subscribe to the idea that the problems arose in the U.S. first because that the Fed was more aggressive. So I think keep a tight eye on European banks. When you look at the performance here on slide 9, it's still very, very, very strong still. So watching that and the interbank spreads that we already mentioned, small caps as well. I'll be writing a little bit about small caps today in my equity analysis or equity note. I think that if you look at the small caps in the US, they have considerable more leverage on the debt side relative to operating income compared to US companies. That performance weakness, we have seen that so many times in history, and it goes back to the risk curve and what also you cut when you have an initial VAR shock. You always cut the least liquid stuff in your portfolio, and small caps are certainly in that camp. So you have to get that out of the door first if you want to reduce risk. But then secondly, as financial conditions tighten, the tightness and the premium in that tightness is always higher the further out you go in terms of the risk curve. And the further out you go in the risk curve, of course, that means small caps and relative to large caps. So so that's definitely an area to keep an eye on. And also if you're a private investor, you have a lot of small caps, it's perfectly fine if you have done your work. Are these good companies? But if many of them have high debt levels or are not profitable, maybe consider taking some of that risk a little bit down by reducing positions. It probably would be a good idea, actually. And then Volkswagen, they're out with an annual report today. There's a lot of press release, I think, with wider analysts at 11 o'clock. And there's a speech from the CEO already now going on here as we speak. And one of the few things that have come out is that they're raising their investment plan for the next 5 years by 13%, $180 billion. They're increasing the allocation key to EV to 70%. And then they also saying that competition is heating up here in the second half. A lot of the car makers have been seeing improvement in their profitability and efficiency in recent quarters, which is also why the operating profit margin has expanded. And then they also see starting or emerging growth signs in China. But again, all of those predictions can be tossed out of the window if things deteriorate from here. So don't put too high a weight on those things. And then earnings watch. So today we have Volkswagen. I'll be updating our EV battle chart, also because we get numbers from BMW as well tomorrow. And then Adobe and Lennar. I think Lennar is super interesting. So the analysts are expecting revenue to be up 3%. Sorry, down 3% year on year, but quarter on quarter revenue is expected to decline 41% on the top line in just a single quarter, in the quarter that ended in February. So, and I'm very curious to hear what Lennar is saying on orders and what they're seeing in terms of outlook, given this interest rate shock. And now if banks are holding a little bit back on this shock, what would it mean for the wider real estate market, including all the home builders like Lennar?
All right, we'll watch for that. And as we look at the macro calendar, again, we do have the US CPI today. Would have been a highly anticipated event, given how willing the Fed seemed to be to sort of re-up its hawkishness after the hot January data. So let's see how it rolls in. I'm not sure it will have an impact beyond the very short term, because I think it's more about, again, what is going on in the credit function, what has just happened to the U.S. banking system. There was the saying, and I certainly wasn't the first, but I was quite early in chiming in with that phrase, the Fed is going to tighten until something breaks. Well, with the massive repricing of yields, the thing that broke was the weakest bank balance sheets that went too far out on the duration. And with that, suddenly they did not have the necessary capital to cover when there was a run on their bank. So that's what is broken is the banking system. And with that, we have the risk of a dysfunctional and malfunctioning credit impulse into the U.S. economy. And how quickly this unfolds into the real economic numbers and growth will be the critical thing in the months from here. So therefore, stuff like February data is suddenly just going to be tossed out the window by this market as we await the trajectory of data from here. And that'll, I think, will be really key. So keep that in mind as a risk parameter here, as well as just the rapidly unfolding situation and all the metrics that we need to track in terms of measures of risks in the system, the TED spread or the FRA OIS spread, et cetera. So we'll try to keep you on top of that with the Saxo Market Call. And yeah, that's it for today. We'll be back again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.